In a world filled with spyware, ransomware, phish, and more, we need you to be the hero. In this podcast, Information Protection and Security is bringing new ways to fight back against the dangerous actors looking to do digital and physical harm. We'll give you everything you need to know on a different topic of risk every month. Coming to you from IPS with Love.
Welcome, I'm Lisa Waddle.
And I'm John Nekrasov.
And Hallmark may not have a card for it, but May 2nd is World Password Day. Order your balloons now. But when better to review our passwords that help keep bad guys at bay?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of wish that Hallmark had a World Password Day card. Like, I would send that to everyone, at least in our department, if not all of my friends, just to remind them I work in cybersecurity. I feel like it's just like, it's a good promotional kind of
right
effort.
And then guess their password, right?
Like, 100%.
Change it from 12345.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the whole idea of like penetration testing hacking, right? Is just demonstrating to your friends like you're
how
not secure
easily
enough.
So. Yes. Yours is something from Lord of the Rings.
But first,
am I right?
No, you're wrong. You're entirely wrong. But first, if it seems that you and those around you are kind of stressed out, you know, if you work in cybersecurity, it is an intense industry. A lot is happening. We've talked about it in this podcast in the cybersecurity space, in the healthcare space, where we work with things like the Change Healthcare breach. And you actually talked with Katie Lang, who's the Director of Workforce Health and Safety here at HCA Healthcare, about battling burnout in the security field. So let's listen into that.
Great.
Welcome, Katie. Now, your work is focused on the emotional and mental well-being of our colleagues. And being a healthcare company, I think a lot of us think about how stressful it is to be on the front lines, right? To be a nurse, to be a doctor, to make life-changing decisions. But today we want to talk about how your work applies to security professionals who are also under stress and strain, right?
Yeah, absolutely, you're right. So cybersecurity is a 24/7 operation, right? You know, and our team is always working around the clock. We have to make sure all the machines, all the computers, everything is a safe environment. So there's a huge amount of stress. And yes, that is also leading to the care of patients. So although they're not right in the room touching and affecting a patient by bedside, they're doing massive amounts of work around the clock every day taking care of patients.
Definitely. And yeah, I think the feeling insecurity, you know, given the environment and how healthcare is targeted by cyber criminals, it's not, if a cyber event happens, it really is when is one going to happen, right? We just kind of have to expect that.
Right. And that means that the threat is always there. And I think there was a research done by Forrester that actually came out that said 66% of professionals working in cybersecurity were having some type of mental health issues, suffering stress, burnout. And 51% of those individuals actually went to medication to help. It was so fear. So there is that constant threat, that burden of worry, and on top of trying to just perform everyday job actions.
Well, it's surprising to hear that research, but it is a little comforting to know you're not alone, right? If you're feeling that and feeling that there's too much pressure or you're approaching burnout, you're not the only one.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a common thing right now, this burnout, this stress. And around that is the stigma. And, you know, for so long, our culture has been like, hi, how you doing? Oh, I'm good. How are you? Oh, I'm good. You know, in the hall and you just pass. And so I think that kind of alludes to this stigma of everything's fine. Everything's great. Everything's under control, you know, and you can't handle like that for so long, you know. And so one of the first easy things to do, a natural thing to do to help reduce the stigma is to actually listen to somebody when you say them, how are you, right? And listen to their response. One of my favorite things that I've been starting to do lately is if someone asks, oh, hey, how are you? I respond with, I'm feeling awesome today, or I'm feeling a little sluggish. But I say I'm feeling, and I give a word, and I'm not apologizing for something. If I'm feeling pretty tired, I need a nap. You know, I'm just stating where I am. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean if I'm feeling angry or anxious that I'm not going to do my job. I'm just feeling that way. And it's different, but it's a one word answer. You don't have to go into details, but it's an honest answer to a simple question. And then you can return by saying, how are you feeling?
Right. So just that little change. I love the way of phrasing it, normalizing it, because I think maybe a lot of us think, I know I do, and maybe are taught that when you come to work, you've got to bring your best self, right? Mm-hmm. And just your best self. And so you should always be, how are you? I'm great. I'm doing my job, right? To the mm-hmm. best of my ability. But listening and answering honestly, that how does that change that dynamic?
It's making it okay to hear someone say that. It may be a little shocking at first, or maybe when you say it the first time, that feels kind of awkward. But if more and more people are doing it, it really opens this like, okay, well, you're stressed out. I'm stressed out, but you know what? Later today, I'm going to go do something that's going to fill my cup, that's going to, you know, ramp me up again. Mm-hmm. So there's nothing that you have to delve into. It's more of, this is where I am, and that's okay. It's okay to be a little sluggish and say it.
And we're not all at 100% all the time. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it really destigmatizes feeling down or feeling tired or feeling, upset
and
or anxious.
Okay.
That it's okay, because we all feel that.
Mm-hmm.
So other than kind of copping to the fact that I'm not feeling great today, what else can anyone do to help when they're not feeling 100%?
Yeah. So like I said, you're going to go to work. You're going to do your job, right? Mm-hmm. And you may come home and you're exhausted. It was a terrible day at work. Everything went wrong. Or I'm really anxious about my meeting tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So what you can do is find something that fills your cup of soul. Something that fulfills you, that makes you feel a little bit accomplished. So maybe if you had a bad day, you could end it up like, well, at least I did this today. Whether that's volunteering, whether that's building something or doing some art, exercising, anything that takes your mind off what you were doing, but something that puts you in an accomplishment mode.
I love that, because it's really addressing the whole you. You know, we hear a lot about self-care and we think, oh, that means taking a bubble bath or something. But I love the way you frame it as do something that you know you're good at, that brings you joy. Maybe that's cooking dinner, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe it's painting. Maybe it's being out in nature. But that way you feel like, oh, I am not work. I'm not my work. And since I did not have a good day at work, I am still having a good life. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's not you have to do it for yourself. It's you could do anything, but it's something that puts that feather in your cap. Something that I've been doing recently, which I call are my good karma walks. And so you take a trash bag or whatever, and trash. I bought like $5 a little trash. Those little
those grabbers,
arms. Yeah. Take my dog and literally walk around the neighborhood, and while we're just moseying and she's sniffing, I'm just picking up little pieces of trash. And it's so amazing that other people walk by and that's a great idea, and then my dog kind of learned on, now she's going and pointing out, oh, pick this up. So it's just an activity. Other people appreciate it. I appreciate it. And it's leaving the world a better place.
Real sense of accomplishment. Yeah.
Right. It's immediate accomplishment. There's gratification and you're doing something positive.
That's great. I love that. And I think, being outside is probably a good idea too. Walking, if you don't have time to do anything major. I know we've talked about just breathing, taking
just
a moment
sitting.
And sitting and raising your awareness can give you some perspective sometimes, right?
Yeah, you just kind of have to pause and read about where am I? What's important to me?
Oh, great tips, Katie. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I appreciate you sharing those with
Absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely.
Wow, well, that was great. I don't know. I think I find it very helpful just thinking about ways to de-stress. It's easy when you're in the zone at work and you just have a million things flying at you and a million things to respond to and potentially even pressing things that involve other people's security. I know it can be hard to unplug, I guess. So I'm kind of just curious in general, Lisa, what stresses you out outside of work, I guess, or maybe inside of work too. Like what puts you in this spot
where you're
like, I gotta unplug?
Well, and you know, it is what I love that Katie talked about. It is the little things, right? It's often not a big stressor. It's those little stressors that add up. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, since we've been in a hybrid workspace, you know, at home, it's great. I can go meeting to meeting. Every meeting is on the hour. But when we have meetings that are just backed up against each other, I like to be on time, which mm-hmm. means being early. And so I get stressed about that. Meetings mm-hmm. that go over, I'm running, I have to go from one end of the building to the other. It's a small thing, but I arrive at the meeting already stressed.
Right. I think similarly, decision anxiety kind of bothers me in a lot of different places in life. But one small thing that kind of, you know, if I'm trying to unplug and I sit down and I'm like, there are so many movies out there, so many shows out there, and I want to keep up with all of them. But then I can't decide what I want to keep up with. And I don't know. Sometimes I find myself in front of my TV late at night just being like, what am I going to watch tonight? And then the time goes by and I didn't watch anything. I was just wasting my whole evening.
Decision freezing. Yes.
Exactly.
Well, and you know, I hate to hit you in your area of Zen, but this really relates to passwords, because streaming service Roku, they recently announced that they had a breach of over 500,000 users' credentials, you know, and it turns out it was done by credential stuffing, which happens a lot. And that's where the bad guys buy or steal credentials, username, passwords, and then just plug them in anywhere they can. And, you know, we might all use really secure passwords on our bank account, but often on our streaming, we maybe use the same passwords or reuse passwords from shopping accounts. And that's why our number one tip for password hygiene is never reuse a password, right?
That's exactly right. So NordPass, a cybersecurity site, did some research and said that the average person has 168 basically accounts that require passwords. And so it's like, it is just really hard to remember an individual password for every single one of those things. Mm-hmm. Like, it's hard to remember that many details. But if you do reuse passwords, that means that like any of those accounts with the reused password is much more likely to get breached, because criminals are basically going through all those sites, like you said, and just trying to plug them in as mm-hmm. much as possible. And especially if your password is a common password, something that someone else might think of, that's when things get problematic, because maybe they didn't actually breach your account or your credentials. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we think about really common passwords, which we'll talk about in a little bit, you know, if 70 people in a company set their company password as password, the criminal just has to, you know, copy and paste basically and just see, does this combination work with all of these accounts? Mm-hmm. And if even one of them gets a hit, right, and they can get into the company databases and we get into huge trouble.
Well, and even, yeah, and personally, right? I mean, mm-hmm. they can get access. I mean, on your Roku account, they could get access to your credit card. There is information there that you need to protect. That's why there's a password. And if you're not using a strong password, it's almost like you might as well not have a password. It's so easy. You know, like you said, if password is your password, which that's one of the top passwords used worldwide, still, believe it or not.
Which is crazy. Like, we've talked so much about passwords in the last like decade or so, mm-hmm. you know, reminding people that this is really like one of the most important things that you own in mm-hmm. the digital landscape. Like, you think about protecting your valuables when you leave your car, right? Your password is in general going to be more valuable than all of those things, like mm-hmm. other than your wallet, right? And so I think, you know, we're going to talk a little bit later toward the end of this podcast about ways you can kind of go beyond passwords and kind of start to think about protecting yourself without remembering 150 passwords.
Right.
But we do still have some tips for how to make the passwords that you do have stronger.
Definitely. You know, I visited my parents recently, and my dad sat me down for the talk about like where everything is located. And he wouldn't tell me on the phone. He wanted to do it in person because he wanted to reveal to me the password for the whole home security system, which is administrator, lowercase a. He made a point of saying that. So I didn't write it down. But I have to say, I mean, that's how most of us keep track of passwords, right? Is if we maybe write them down, hopefully not on a post-it right on our computer, but maybe in a secret notebook somewhere. But it is that managing or remembering the passwords that makes people or causes people to reuse passwords. Mm-hmm. So how do you keep track of your passwords?
Yeah. So just a brief note, I think it's also important to mention often like default passwords will come with things like your router mm-hmm. that will be named something like administrator. Mm-hmm. And you really, the company will expect you to change that to something that is not the default password. But if you don't change that, that means that criminals kind of have mm-hmm. a way to get into your network mm-hmm. easily because, again, they're just trying the defaults. You can even, with a lot of devices, you can even Google the default password and get in because they want you to be able to access it initially when you buy it. So that's important to note. Mm-hmm. I would say that for me, you know, I've tried a few different things, but what I use now is a password manager. And a password manager is basically a tool that lets you keep track of all your passwords. It can randomly generate them for each account. Mm-hmm. It will make it super secure. And basically all you have to do is just remember one super complex password. So what you'll want to do is create a passphrase that protects your account mm-hmm. over like at least 15 characters, mixes of uppercase and lowercase letters, mm-hmm. numbers, symbols. Make it something that only you can remember and it be long and memorable. But that's the lock on your account. Mm-hmm. And then it will track all of your smaller individual passwords for you.
Right. And that is a solution that I know lots of tech people in our company recommend as well. You know, we can't at HCA, we don't recommend using a password manager for our work mm-hmm. passwords because it's a question of how safe they are too. Some of them have had breaches and we have not landed on what we think is the most secure one to recommend yet, mm-hmm. but we do recommend that people use password managers for their personal passwords, certainly.
That's exactly right. So I do have to ask, Lisa, are all your passwords corgi-themed?
Pet names, you know, pet breeds, those are among the most common. So I have moved away from that.
See, but you did originally.
I did. I love corgis. I heart corgis. Yeah, that would be the easy way. But that's the problem, right, that anyone who follows me on Facebook or Instagram would know that corgis are my life. So they would probably guess that. Mm-hmm. They would know the names of my corgis. And it just shows how easy these things that you think are so personal to you that only you know. You know, I know some people talking about passphrases, which, you know, are long. And often we hear that over 10 digits is the way to go. The longer, the harder it is to crack. But not if you pick, you know, your favorite Taylor Swift lyric, right? Mm-hmm. Because that's anyone can plug those in and just try every song out there, every phrase from a book. The best advice I had gotten was to pick something like that, a phrase that makes sense to you, then take just the first letter of each word in that phrase mm-hmm. and then mix in some characters and memorize that. And hopefully if that's the one password you have to remember, then to get into your password manager, it's a little more manageable, right?
Right. Yeah, we really recommend steering away from any kind of easily accessible personal information. So family members' names, pet names, your address, your birthday, mm-hmm. phone number, anything like that, steer away from all that because it's just in this modern day and age, it's just too easy to find that information.
Well, so there's so many passwords, and it seems like every day we all add another password when we try to use something else. And it seems like I've been hearing for years that passwords are going away. Is the end of passwords near?
Well, I mean, the reality is passwords are super annoying, right? Like that. The bottom line is that we don't want to be having to remember all these different things to get into our accounts. But we need to have a way to verify our identity, right? Because mm-hmm. you don't want just anyone accessing your accounts. So obviously biometrics is something that has been developed a lot. Biometric technology like Face ID on your iPhone is mm-hmm. a really easy way to kind of have a one-to-one match with your identity that, you know, tells the phone this is me who's logging in. Mm-hmm.
So even if someone steals your phone, they cannot log in.
That's exactly right.
Have your face, yeah.
But in general, securing your account with a password just isn't really enough anymore. And that's where multi-factor authentication or MFA comes in. And that's something that's not like new. You're probably familiar with SMS or text-based MFA, which basically the idea is you need two pieces of identity verification to get into your account. So you'd need your password, and then you'd also need a code that was sent to your phone. Mm-hmm. The problem is, even though SMS-based verification does work, there are certain things, specifically SIM swapping, which is a new type of scam where criminals target your cell phone number, which means that like that's actually not the most secure way to protect yourself anymore.
Right. So the criminals have found a way to ruin it again for mm-hmm. everybody, right? I mean, we had MFA where we would get that code, and so they found a way to crack that, and that's on the rise, SIM swapping. Mm-hmm. And so, we need to think about then what's the next level. As you said, biometrics, pass keys, some kind of other authenticator, right?
Yeah, so having an authenticator app is kind of an easy solution that's growing really both in both corporate and kind of your personal life that you can use to both protect yourself from SIM swapping, and also it creates a more secure way to log in where you don't have to remember your passwords most of the time except to like get into your authenticator app. So basically, without getting too into the weeds, your authenticator app will communicate to the website you're trying to log into, and they'll both have like cryptographic codes that will match each other. And as a user, you don't really need to understand like the underlying like standards of how all that works, but it means that you aren't having to constantly remember all of the passwords. And the other benefit is that you're actually not, if you're using passkeys with an authenticator app, you're actually not entering your credentials ever into those websites, which means that criminals, if they're trying to phish you or using like a credential stealing malware, can't actually log any passwords you entered because the app communicated with a secret code. Mm-hmm. And so the goal ultimately, I think in the industry, in my understanding, is that eventually we may get to a point where in most cases you never use a password. And criminals can't steal your credentials because of that.
Oh, I love that. So more secure and easier for us. Mm-hmm. That's a win-win.
Yeah. Yeah. So definitely our big recommendations are use a password manager. Keep your passwords complex. We hope you found these tips helpful. And tune in next episode to hear Director of Threat-Informed Defense here at HCA Healthcare, Caleb Chitwood. He'll discuss some of the real-world dangers of credential phishing and kind of what are the challenges that in our security department that we face all the time and how we're working to combat it. So thanks.
Sounds great. Thanks.